I think in terms of allies, there needs to become a time where we don't need allies. So if you identify as an ally, then rather than focus all your energy on this community, find your other allies, rally your allies. We don't just need you to be an ally. I need you to tell your brother and your sister and your husband and your wife and your partner and whoever to also be an ally, because one isn't enough. And we've been asking for relief for a long time, and for somebody to come and think that they can relieve it on their own is lovely, but unrealistic. So the true work of an ally is to, you know, rally your troops, get allyship to where it needs to be so that we don't need to call you an ally anymore.
Hey everybody, I'm Sarah Taylor, and welcome to the Queerpreneur podcast. This is the place for queer women who want to start or grow their business and their straight allies, where we build community, raise awareness, and create a platform to celebrate incredible women leaders, change makers, and trailblazers. In every episode, my intention is to share knowledge, learning, and resources that inspire you to think big, create more impact, and step fully into your life and business in a way that feels authentic to you. So if you're ready to take action towards creating a more equal world for everyone, then let's get started. Hey everybody, it's Sarah here, and welcome back to the Queerpreneur podcast. And today's episode is one that I am so excited to be sharing with you. I am talking to Shar Bailey, and I've wanted to get Shar on the podcast for quite some time. And if you don't know who Shar is, if you don't know who she is yet, once you've listened to this podcast episode, I know that you're going to be following her everywhere you can, because she is such an inspiration and an incredible role model. In our conversation, we are talking about her experiences and how she utilizes her lived experience, her intersectionality, to help people reflect on everything that they have inside themselves. She's a life coach, she's an NLP practitioner, she's a spiritual entrepreneur, she does Reiki and breath work to help the people that she works with. And you're going to hear us talking about the power of owning our identity, how important it is that we have visibility, we have representation of differences, of marginalized groups of people, and how that helps others to feel safe and confident to show up as their true, unique, authentic selves. And of course, you know, one of the big things we're talking about here is allyship. How to be a great ally. The harm that is caused by the assumptions that people make about race, sexuality, gender, autism, and other marginalizations. And we talk about some of the biggest challenges of overcoming bias and discrimination, and why, when there's still over 70 countries in the world where being gay is a crime and people are being killed for their existence, that allies are so, so freaking important. And you know this, right? So please listen in, please listen well. And before I let you get on with the podcast, I just want to tell you about my new workshop. I've launched it this week. It's the LGBTQIA plus Allies Awareness to Action Workshop. It's happening on the 22nd of April. You can book your spot via the link in the show notes, or you can DM me. I would so love to see you there. Let's dive into today's podcast episode. Shar, welcome to the Queerpreneur podcast. It's great to have you here.
Thanks for having me here, Sarah. I'm really excited to be here on a Saturday morning, nice and early. I've followed you on Instagram for a while. I know we've both been, you know, checking out each other's work. So it's really nice to actually meet you in the virtual space, see your face and have a conversation. It's lovely. Thank you for having me.
Oh, brilliant. And yeah, I guess it's probably worth saying, you know, that we're recording this on a Saturday morning. 6th of March, and we are in the UK, and it's lockdown number 3. I think it's number
lockdown. Lockdown 3.0. That's what we're calling it, isn't it?
What are we calling it?
Lockdown 3.0.
3.0, yeah. 3.0. But we are seeing some light at the end of the tunnel. We are seeing the way out. So let's just hope. As RuPaul says, we don't fuck it up.
Well, I don't think we will, but I don't know if we've got that much control.
Yeah, yeah, it's unlikely to be the public, actually. But anyway, we won't go into that. So how's lockdown been for you?
Really suited me, actually. It's been a real eye-opener in terms of being able to reflect more, invite stillness, lean into sort of isolation, lean into being more vulnerable and more alone. And it's been really interesting to sort of spend time with my family. I sort of moved back home just before lockdown happened. We'd just lost my grandfather, and it was a really trying time for the family, but being thrust into this environment where we're in each other's space, it was almost really enriching. I've really grown throughout this time. I think it's really suited my traits and the things that I like to do. I'm very much a home bug. I like, you know, I'm very much a hermit. I like to be indoors. I like my space. I like working from home. So it's been really nice to embrace all of that and, you know, be able to do more work and impact parts of the community that I might not have had the opportunity to had it not been in this new virtual space. So I think it's, you know, it's treated me well, actually. I can't really complain too much about it.
Yeah, it's interesting. That's really interesting and possibly different perspective. I don't think, I'm sure you're not alone in that. And some of that resonates for me because I'm a massive introvert and I live on my own. As you started talking, I was thinking, I've never been on a silent retreat. But that's what came into my head. It was like, you know, maybe that's like almost a bit of a sense. And I know we've been forced into it in a lot of ways, but the hermit and things like that, it sort of really resonates with me too. And one of the things that I'm thinking about, like, the future, I'm like, oh no, I don't know if I want to go back. You know, part of me has loved a lot of what it has brought to lockdown in terms of that, just being able to, yeah, be quiet and be on my own and those sorts of things. And I think for me, there's a bit of a risk though that I become cut off and isolated because I am on my own. But yeah, interesting. I think there's a whole new set of almost anxiety provoking, potentially, things now ahead on the horizon. So, yeah.
Well, I'm a big believer in I study and practice universal law, and I believe in the idea of perception being the driving force of our decision making. So I have two felt that anxiousness about reconnecting and finding a new space in the world or a new way to present in the world or just how to show up in the world now that we've gone through this odd experience. Mm-hmm. But on the optimist in me is actually really excited about that and the idea of finding new ways to connect, the idea of understanding how somebody else went through that journey and what they learnt. I feel almost as though I have this artillery of tools now that I'm really excited to practice on people in real life when I see them, because I feel so much more knowing about myself. Like, for instance, yesterday, my partner accidentally dropped my phone and it just smashed, completely obliterated into pieces. And there was a time where that would have really sort of unsettled me, maybe stressed me out, would have been like, for fuck's sake, phone smashed, I'm going to be shaving my lady hairs on my face all day and I would have cuts. And but actually, I was like, oh. And I just continued. I was making breakfast with my partner. I was pretending to be sexy. And she was like, oh my God, I've dropped a phone. And I was like, yeah, but I'm just carrying on being sexy and we're having a nice time and the phone doesn't have to impede on this moment. And I think being in lockdown has really made me hone in on this idea that our life is a collection of these moments. And unless we hold on to these really exciting moments, then we'll look back and we'll have missed opportunities. I don't want to miss an opportunity to smooch my missus just because my phone screen smashed, because that's not important anymore. I think lockdown's really helped me prioritize a lot.
Yeah, I love that. I'm thinking about that opportunity. You're making me think for my, you know, about it's obviously, you
know, it's what coaches do. Coaching.
Yeah, it's bringing up for me is like this, which I have thought about is, what have I learned? What do I want to hold on to? Because I can choose to do that. You know, it's all there for me to choose in terms of what the boundaries that may have changed, you know, the things that I've learned and introduced into my own personal practices and all of that stuff, just because there's some external factors going on. It's my me and how I am and how I show up is within my control. So, yeah.
Thank you. All of the choice is freedom, isn't it?
Yeah, love it. Yeah, and that's our inner, it's like our inner sanctuary, isn't it? It's ours and we totally own that. So thank you for that. Thank you for that bit of reflection.
You're really
helpful. And I'm sure it will be helping people, you know, when they listen back to the podcast too.
Hope so.
Thank you so much. And could you tell us a bit about, who you are, what you do? If you're comfortable, share your pronouns, that would be great as well.
Yes, I love the idea of who I am and what do I do, because they're so different, aren't they? Such a different elements of a person. I suppose who I am to the world, I use she and her pronouns. I'm black and brown. I'm autistic. I'm a lesbian. I'm happy. What I do is utilize all of those things that make me intersectional and make me the person that I am. And I try to use my skills, my knowledge and my experience to help other people reflect on what they have inside of themselves. I'm a life coach, NLP practitioner. I study spirituality, Reiki, healing, breath work. And I try to take everything that I've learned and that I've known and put it into a way that other people can relate to it, connect to it, and gain something through a conversation or a interaction that's going to help them show up however they will feel the most comfortable and be the most authentic version of who they are supposed to be. I'm a big believer that we are so conditioned by our experiences and by our interactions and by other people that sometimes it can be really difficult and almost something that you would shy away from doing. It's easier to mask and play a character to the world than it is to actually be yourself. And I really want to champion those people who have taken that step and are ready to embrace who they really are, not just the idea of what the world wants them to be. Because that's how I lived my life as a character, the idea of what the world wanted me to be. I didn't embrace my blackness. I didn't embrace my queerness. I didn't embrace anything that other people looked at as different. So all of those things that I once hated, I now love. And I want to help other people identify the things that they can start to love about themselves. So yeah. I guess, does that say who I am and what I do?
I think so.
It's It's what I've said now, isn't it? So
yeah, thank you. And I heard a lot in there. One of the things I heard was, being authentic and showing up as who we are with all of our differences, all of our uniqueness, then we're in a way that's enough to help other people, because they see that, they feel your true energy, they feel the truth of who you are, and I think it creates that visibility for people to see that there are other people like them, you know, that have similar parts of themselves, I suppose, you know, and gives them the courage sometimes that they might need, or the reassurance, or the connection to think, someone might get me. Someone might get me as my true self, and it might be safe, it might be okay if someone's struggling, I suppose. So that was one of the things I heard in there.
To show up the way we are. A prime example of this is I'm doing a recording a TED Talk next Saturday. But as I was talking to the producer, they said, oh, what we'll do is we'll give you the allotted time. Edit it. They're gone now. They're being cuddled now. And then we'll clip the best bits together and it will sort of look seamless and it will look like, you know, you haven't made a mistake. Or, and I said, well, I don't want that. I said, well, if I'm going to deliver, you know, this talk to this community, then if I fluff my words, or if I miss a point, or if I say the wrong word, then surely that shows them who I am. And I don't want to portray a perfect image of myself to the world, because by any stretch of the imagination, I'm by no means perfect. You can ask my mum, my sister, my partner, they will tell you. They will tell you without a doubt. And I think there's sometimes a pressure to present this image that is perfect and seamless and doesn't make mistakes and doesn't have emotion or doesn't cry or doesn't feel. And actually, all of those things that we do that are real are the things that actually help people connect, that actually help people to believe. So to be visible is important, but not to be visible in a way that is, I am the shining example of what good looks like. Mm-hmm. It's just, there's a human who makes mistakes, who feels, who worries, who gets nervous and perseveres and tries, and that's the difference for me. I persevere and I try, and I fuck it up sometimes, sometimes, you know, I'm not meant to fuck it up, but I do sometimes. See, because that's a reality.
And as you were talking, I was thinking about, this is a bit of an extreme thought and I'm like hesitating to say it, but by presenting ourselves in this seamless kind of perfect way, it's almost harmful. Mm. It's almost like holding people back, you know, in a way, because, yeah, I mean, we all have people that we admire, and I'm going to ask you a bit about that later. But, yeah, if I want to be Brené Brown, for example, and I think, be like Brené Brown, because look at Brené Brown, she's perfect, you know, she never messes up or whatever, blah blah blah, and I guess she does, but yeah, it's like that, it's not helping people to go for it and really express and live their potential, which is, you know, what you're, I imagine, one of the things that's important to you in amongst all of this, it certainly is to me. It's like helping people to see what's truly possible for them. And if they're just holding themselves up all the time against some unreal ambition or aspiration or future vision for themselves, they're never, it's going to be harder for them to go for it, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's the same with the thing that happens in society all the time. It doesn't matter what industry or avenue you're in, if there's an unrealistic expectation, then people fall short, and then that damages them because they then become reluctant to retry. And that's a cycle that I want to help people break out of.
Yeah. And congratulations on the TED Talk, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Amazing. I look forward to seeing that at some point.
I haven't actually written it yet, and I don't think, exclusive here, secret, I don't think I am actually going to write it. I think I'm going to freestyle it. I think I'm going to have sort of maybe 6 key points and then just go for it. So fingers crossed for me. The dogs don't like that.
You'll be amazing. So yeah, is that, in terms of a mission or a vision or a purpose, is it encapsulated in what you've described, or is that something that feels different? Or
I think for me, I used to have a big mission and a big vision about who I was going to be and what I wanted to do. And it was all very much about changing the world. As I've sort of worked more on myself, I've realised that actually my mission is very simple, and it's simply to leave every person that I interact with lighter or interested or calmer, or just to have benefit, to have something positive come from every interaction with every individual. Because I've experienced lots of things in my life where I've looked to the future and then the future's been far away and life happens. And what's actually really worked for me is being present in the moment and being able to connect with somebody here and now, because that's really been the strength of my life. When I look back at what my life has been like and the people that I might have helped or the feedback that I've had, it's always been just in an instant, in a moment where a conversation's happened, an authentic connection's happened, you know, a compassionate conversation's happened. And that those are the real things that for me really make the difference. So if I can just set my intention, live in the present and try and make that difference with each interaction, even if it's sort of like a DM message on Instagram, I try to embody that, because that's a choice, and that's not about, nobody else can control that. The future can't control that, time can't control that. I'm in complete control of the decision that I make right now, the decision that I make to smile at a stranger, the decision that I make to hold the door open for somebody. I make those decisions daily, and that's for me a big enough mission and purpose to put emphasis on that every day.
Yeah, you're living it now, as opposed to this future. Yeah, like you say, whatever. It's future, it's a statement in a way, I suppose. That's kind of all it is. And actually you can live it in every moment.
Yeah.
I think is what you're saying.
Yeah, I guess as you know, as coaches, we have, you know, ambitions and ideas and goals about what we're going to be able to help people with and what we're going to be able to do. And I think to actually really truly embody a coach, I'm not a coach 24 hours a day, but I can embody the idea of having positive interactions with individuals, because for me that's practice. I don't choose my clients. I feel like my clients choose me. I didn't choose to be a coach. I feel like coaching chose me. And so it chose me, and my clients choose me because of the authentic interaction. So that's, it has to filter out every part of my existence.
Yeah. Yeah. It's making me think about that sort of alignment and that energetic. It's like the attraction in a way that, yeah, when we're in alignment with our truth and what we're here to do, it happens.
That's why I'm here.
Love it. So in terms of challenges or lessons, whatever word you like to use, for you professionally or personally, as you've built yours. So how long have you been doing the work that you do and in this sort of space?
Seventh year.
Yeah.
So I've been independent for that long now, coaching.
Yeah.
I guess the challenges for me have been owning my identity, being proud of it. Though for a long time, I wouldn't use my name, Charmaine, because it was a black sounding name. I wouldn't tell people that, you know, people would assume that I'm mixed race, so that I'm black and white, but I'm actually black and my mum's Indian. I would hide that from people because racism. I definitely wouldn't tell people that I was a lesbian. I definitely wouldn't tell people that I was autistic or on the spectrum. Because the main challenge for me was knowing that other people have biases that are conscious and unconscious. And I've experienced, you know, people who are consciously being biased towards me and people who might not even recognise that their language or that their behaviour is, you know, demeaning or sometimes even inflammatory. My background's in law, and when I left working for the law firm, it was on a day that one of the senior managers had said to me, "Oh, you're wearing a pencil skirt, now you look like a leader," because I'd always worn trouser suits and been more comfortable in wearing those clothes. So the challenges for me haven't necessarily been in accepting myself, but almost in trying to educate other people that about the fact that I'm not intimidating and I'm not something to be feared and I'm not that weird. I don't go home and eat shoes. You know, I'm a human. There's, you know, I'm not an over-sexualized character. I am attracted to women. I'm a woman of color. I have autism. I have different challenges in the world, but that doesn't make me a threat to you or lesser than you or something that you have to shy away from. My biggest challenge is trying to help people understand how they can embrace the things that make me different rather than either tolerating them, because, you know, we've all been in that situation where we know that someone's perhaps rolled their eyes but they've tolerated the fact that you're there, and also trying to encourage people to have an understanding of how I maneuver, why things are important to me, what my history has been in terms of culturally and the LGBTQIA+ community, why we talk about these issues. I have people say things like, "Oh God, you've got the same rights now, why are you still going on about it?" You know, and there's still 70 places around the world where people are being killed for their existence. So I think education's a massive part of that. The challenges for me have always been around how can I get this person to understand? How can I get them to hear me?
Yeah. So it's that, like you say, I think that the conscious or unconscious bias and the unconsciousness of, I mean, I can speak for myself, here in terms of, it's like they can't see it, at that point where they can't see it, but that you can kind of almost sense it in a way. And you're making me think a lot today. Thank you so much for that. I'm thinking about with friends of mine, friends that I've known, you know, for a long time, before I really dug into the work that I do now. So when I was, and they're making me think about something else now, I've got this like coaching session. When I was not really fully out at work in my workplace, so I had a corporate career for 30 years, and I came out to myself within that period of time. About the last 10 years, I was kind of like, out a bit more until I left. But when I left, there were still people that didn't know about my sexual orientation. I was a senior manager in a big corporate in London. And some of my closest friends used to say things to me like, oh, I quite like the fact that, you know, it's not obvious that you're gay. Or, and it hurt me, but I don't think I fully understood it, why it hurt me. Or, I don't know what you mean by, you know, straight people having greater privilege and things like that. And of course, I'm like reflecting on it now and thinking, now I understand why it hurt me. Now I know I understand why it made me really uncomfortable. And but their awareness of all of that was just not, they weren't aware. And I think that, you know, the next thing I'm going to ask you about is like allies, and it's an amazing segue into that. And there's kind of like two communities of allies, I suppose. And, you know, we're all one community, but when I'm thinking about allies within the LGBTQIA plus community, and then our cisgendered heterosexual allies, my question really is around sort of the biggest barriers to inclusion. So anyone that is listening, what is it that gets in the way? I'd love to hear your thoughts on that, in terms of that understanding, in terms of that understanding you, understanding me, you know, understanding anyone that is in a marginalized community, or whether that's one group or several. I'll stop speaking now, but yeah, I'd just love to hear your thoughts on some of those things that get in the way.
I think, I'm massively into personal development, and I am a big believer in the saying that when you point one finger forward, you point three fingers back. I have learned through my experience that the people who have the biggest issues with me are the ones that have the biggest problems with themselves. It's usually people who haven't done the work on themselves, who, if I'm a trigger to somebody just by existing, then that doesn't mean that there's a problem to me, with me. That means that there's a problem, or maybe even not even a problem. That means that there is something to think about for that individual. It took me a long time to stop trying to explain myself and try to get other people to understand who I am. Like, it's taking me this long to just get some semblance of me understanding who I am. So how on earth am I going to explain to, you know, Fred over there, who's from a completely different world than I do? When people have an understanding of themselves, they unlock compassion. They unlock empathy.
Mm-hmm.
And I would always encourage people who are allies to, yes, educate yourself, read the books, go on courses, look at history, because all of that information is out there. You don't need to ask a person of colour or a queer person. All of that is out there. But also I'd ask that person to really reflect on themselves. If you're a person who's an ally and you're saying, I want to do the work to help, and something is triggering me, it's not up to anybody else to figure out what the trigger is or why it's triggering. It's up to you to understand, what is it that you've learned? What is it that you need to unlearn? Who hurt you, perhaps? Because these things are the things that spill out, not just into our community, but throughout the world. People who have these issues with others is always because they have an unresolved issue within self. And if you really want to add value to a community, then bring yourself to the community when you can be of value to the community. Just like, you know, like as I think of it as like as an adult, I go to my parents and I add value to them. I can help them with the shopping. Sorry, Mum, if you're listening, you know, she's got a bad back. She's getting a bit older. I can help her around the house and I can add value. As a child, I was like, Mummy, can you do this? Mummy, can you do that? Can you help me? Can you help me grow? And she had to give me all those things so that I can become the woman I am. It was her responsibility. But it's not queer people's responsibility or people of colour's responsibility to help you grow. It's up to you to grow into this person that can then come into the community or come back home and say, now I know what I'm doing. How can I help? What do you need? Because until you're at that point, you're not adding value to the community. You're just adding another problem. It's like we've got another child to feed. Does that make sense?
It does. I like it. I love that piece around, yeah, asking them to think about, you know, that's what we need from them. We need them to come to us and be able to, yeah, add some value, support, help create the change. I love that perspective. That seems really powerful.
Hopefully some allies can take that on, but because I think the allies that for me who have done that have been some of the most, you know, enriching, powerful, supportive, inspirational people that I've got in my life, because they don't come to me and ask me for help. They ask how they can help me.
Yeah. I love that. I'm just thinking about the people, you know, that I'm talking to, that I'm having conversations with, and yeah, again, it's helpful to hear your thoughts on this, because it just feels really like a powerful kind of like, I don't know what to call it, but positioning them, you know, to help them see and get that bit of a like, aha, I see what I can do. And for them to work that out. Yeah. And as I said to you, I think before we started recording, you know, I'm very much here to provide guidance, you know, to be there for questions that may not, then some people might not be sure if it's, you know, okay to ask, or, you know, provide resources or links to resources and all of those things. But obviously I'm not here to do that work for them. And it's that bridge. And it's knowing where, you know, where, how far across the bridge to go. Because I have noticed, and I was saying to you as well before we started, you know, I'm in Clubhouse now, which is like this new social media app that many people will know about. And there's some really powerful conversations going on in there, but they are emotionally draining. Emotionally draining for me with, you know, hearing stories from people around the world who is absolutely not safe for them to be out about who they are in terms of their sexual orientation or gender identity, from countries like Ghana, from countries like Sierra Leone, Russia, places in the world where it's so dangerous. And I listen to those stories, and those people, hear about those people's lives, and it's so fucking real. Mm-hmm. And I know it's real. I knew it was real. And one of the things I say to some of the allies in my rooms on Clubhouse is go follow that person. Hear it. You know, and we shouldn't need to, you know, to bring it to life. But sometimes,
I think we do, like, we as humans, we need evidence. It's just the way we're, what, like, if I said to you, Sarah, have you ever touched fire? You'd be like, yeah, of course I've touched fire. But how many times have you been told not to touch fire because it burns? But we all have that curiosity. How many times people have a lighter and they put their finger through the flame because, you know, we know fire burns. We've been told, it's one of the things that our parents tell us when we are tiny, don't touch the fire. But you have that curiosity. We have that need. And then when you feel that pain, you don't touch the fire again. And I think sometimes storytelling and the power of humanity is almost like, if I tell my story, somebody can touch out and they can burn, They can feel my flame. They can burn with me. And when somebody feels what you feel, hopefully that's enough to make them act.
Yeah. And
sometimes we do need to, as traumatic as it can be and as draining it can be, we need to feel in order to really heal or put the motions in, start to heal.
Yeah. And it's bringing me back to what you were saying earlier about that. That connection, that touching people. And I wonder if there's an element of where we become almost like desensitized.
Absolutely.
To some of this stuff. We can't. I mean, the reason I'm sort of hesitating is a little bit, I wonder if it's part of that might be a choice, because we don't really want to like go there. But I suppose. Being generous and being compassionate and, you know, kind. It's not easy to do that, is it? No one wants to go somewhere that's going to be uncomfortable or feel awkward or make us feel like we're not a good human being.
Of course. And, you know, our brains are wired to survive.
Mm.
They're wired to identify risks, identify things that could be a threat and to avoid them. So it goes against our nature to do these things. But also there's another part of us that are massively compassionate and we need connections. So for me, it's about if I can reconcile that balance within, then I can reproduce that in my behaviours in the world and it can make a difference externally.
Is there anything else that you'd like to say to our allies before I move on to, I'm going to ask you about joy next.
I think in terms of allies, there needs to become a time where we don't need allies. So if you are an ally, or I don't know if this is the right phrase, if you identify as an ally, if you identify as an ally, then rather than focus all your energy on this community, find your other allies, rally your allies. We don't just need you to be an ally. I need you to tell your brother and your sister and your husband and your wife and your partner and whoever to also be an ally, because one isn't enough. And we've been asking for relief for a long time, and for somebody to come and think that they can relieve it on their own is lovely but unrealistic. So the true work of an ally is to, you know, rally your troops, get allyship to where it needs to be, so that we don't need to call you an ally anymore.
Yes. I love it. And just one, I totally agree with you. One thing as well I wanted to add to that was like when you said, I don't know if I identify as an ally, if that's the right. I've also appreciate and believe to identify as an ally also takes courage sometimes. And takes, it's to be truly identifying as an ally and do the work of an ally is uncomfortable.
Absolutely.
So adding to that, I guess today what I want to say is to all the allies that are listening, thank you. I see you and I appreciate you. And I know that everyone else in the LGBTQIA community feels the same. We know that it takes a commitment. It's more than it's a bit of a sort of an old cliche now, but you know, it's more than like saying, oh yeah, I went to a gay wedding, or you know, I've got gay friends, or I've been to gay pride, or I waved a rainbow flag, or whatever it is, you know. Yeah, we really need more than that if we're gonna, and we're not gonna be able to do it on our own for absolute sure. So yeah, thank you. So, yeah, what gives you the most joy about what you do?
These words. I never thought about it like that. when I hear somebody say, I never thought about it like that, that's when I exhale, because those words mean so much. It's all, to me, it's almost like an I love you, because those words mean I am starting to see things in a different way, and that's why I do what I do, so that this lens, the way I see people, is that we all have light inside of us. We are the light. So you don't have to be love and light, because we are already the light. And our experience puts almost like lenses over us. Like, if imagine you put one experience, you put one pair of sunglasses on, so you see the world a little bit differently. And then you have another experience and you put another different colour lens on. And all these experiences break up these lenses. And these lenses, although they're protecting you from things, they're also preventing you from seeing and feeling different things. So when you start to unpack and do the work, you start to remove the lenses. And the more lenses that you remove, the more that you can see and feel, and not only the more you can receive, but the more you can give. And all of this light that you have inside of you starts to seem brighter to the outside world. And it's not necessarily brighter or not. It's always exactly the same light that's always energetically there burning inside every single individual. So it's not necessarily that we have to do anything to become more light. It's just that we unpack all of these things so that we can unleash our light. It's already there. And when people say that, I never thought about it like that way, that to me says, I can remove a lens.
Yeah.
More of my light can shine through. And it stirs something deep in my soul, in my, I don't even know what it is, but when I see that in another person, when I hear that, when they have that penny drop moment, I exhale and there's a level of contentment, and I sit with that person in their contentment, because I know how trying it is to maneuver through the world with your shoulders up, with your frow furrowed, with your chin down, expect almost like, you know, when it starts to rain and you sort of huddle up and you shelter yourself from the rain. People maneuver themselves through life with that energy because they're holding so much of themselves in. So when people say, I didn't think of it like that, it's almost like they're in the sunshine, their shoulders gone back and they're relaxing, and they start to become who they're supposed to be. And yeah. That for me is that is joy.
Yeah.
That is the joy. Because I think happiness comes from when something is happening, it's external, there's a catalyst, and joy comes from this feeling within. And so when people really tap into this, what's actually going on within me, that's really my everything when it comes to work.
Yeah. Like a liberation, that was the word that was coming up for me. That's sort of like they're freed, or something like that. And
it's like, jump in, mate, we're going Brighton.
And like you, it's like, I don't know, this is just my sort of sense of what you were saying, my kind of what my reflections was. It's like you're doing exactly what you need to be doing, or what you're here to do in that moment. What you're giving, your service, if you like.
Yeah, it's massively purposeful for me. I had a near-death experience when I was 16, and part of that was deciding that my purpose is bigger than my person, and understanding that only through connecting with others I can become who I'm supposed to be. I had a lot of ego growing up. I was very good at things. I was autistic, so I was very focused and I'd concentrate on things. I was very intellectual and very sporty, and I had lots of things going for me, and I didn't really ever really think about how the impact it had on the world. And that moment of realization when I was seeing the angels, I like to call it, was about recognizing that this life is about what we can give, not what we can get. And I feel as though like I've given so much, and it just so happens that the universe is beautiful, and that there's this beautiful polarity between what you give and receive. And the more I seem to give, the more I seem to get. So it's sort of, you know, I was prepared to make this sacrifice at that time. I was like, right, I'm giving my life to others, falling on my sword. But actually in understanding that it's more about that exchange.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that came to me a lot later in life, that sort of sense. And I think I'm definitely still, you know, kind of learning about that and developing my trust. And the more that I'm trusting that that is the way it works, I suppose, the more I'm seeing that that is the way it works. And it's just like, it's incredible, really, I believe it.
Mm. Now you've touched the fire.
Before I was like, well, I'll give it a go, but I'm not really sure, you know. Yeah, amazing, thank you. So yeah, a couple more questions. In terms of role models of people that inspire you, who would they be?
So my mum, first and foremost. I come from a long line of powerful women, my mum and my grandmother's grandparents. Mm-hmm. They're massively inspiring. They come from, I suppose in our world we'd say they come from nothing. They come from poverty, like a village in India. They have worked. They're very intuitive. My grandmother had healing hands. My mum's very psychic. You know, my mum had me as a teen and has nurtured me. She went back to university when I was, I think, 7 years old, after like having no qualifications, and now she's got a philosophy in child development, and she dedicates her life to young people who are in care, because she was a young person in care. So her life has massively inspired me. In the queer world, I'd say Lady Phil is my biggest inspiration. I didn't know that black lesbians existed until I saw her. And I saw her as a figure of, you know, hope. And I almost ran to her with can you sign this for me? Because I was so in awe of her, and she embraced me as a sibling, you know, and she took me under her wing and has mentored me and loved me and nourished me and shown me what sisterhood is, and shown me what blackness is, what queerness is, what it means when people say queer black joy, and has made me feel as though I'm valid and worthy enough to experience that.
Wow.
And then I guess the other person I would say is Audre Lorde, just simply because she said women are powerful and dangerous. And I just love the idea that women are so often seen as subservient and non-threatening. And when I think of myself as being dangerous, I don't think of it as a negative connotation. I think something that's dangerous is maybe something that can make a difference. And there is something dangerous about the work that I do. I think that, you know, my dad always says to me, you know, you'd be dangerous if you had a brain. You know, meaning that, you know, you could really, you know, do some good in the world.
Amazing stuff, yeah.
So, yeah, for me, it's that, I guess.
Yeah. I loved what you said about Lady Phil.
Oh, that's
amazing.
Oh, God. Love you,
Phil. Yeah, for anyone that doesn't, well, I'll put the links, you know, any links that we've talked about in the show notes, but yeah, anyone that's not familiar with her, do make sure you check her out. She's incredible.
She's incredible. There are no words, just Google her.
Thank you, Shah. So the next steps for you, your business, your work, what's happening over the next sort of 6 months to a year?
Because I write courses, so I do a lot of course writing. That's the majority of the work that I'm sort of doing day to day. I'm also working for Coventry City of Culture at the moment. Coventry is one city of culture, so I'm training, I guess, all of Coventry on equality and diversity. I've just written a course on that, so that's something I'm really proud of this year. But I'm really focused on the work that I'm doing in schools this year. My sister is 16. She is missing out on her GCSEs this year, and being back at home and recognising how much of an impact that's had on her and her peer group, I've written a course for schools which focuses on self-awareness, confidence for young people aged 13 to 18. So I'm literally dedicating the next 6 months to that demographic of young people, because I work all the time. I'm not going to stop hosting. I'm not going to stop seeing my clients one-to-one. But when it comes to the, you know, a 9-to-5 things that I can actually do in the day, I want to dedicate this time to young people, because I think they are the ones who are really going to suffer from COVID. Mm. And being in the position where I'm self-employed, I have the power to decide where I want to put my energy.
Yeah.
And that's exactly where it needs to, for me, that's where it needs to be this year, because, you know, that's important for me this year.
Wow. I love that.
So I might get you involved. Come and help me.
Say what? Come and help you?
Yeah, I'm going to have to get you involved.
Yeah, I will. I love that. Yeah, I'll talk to you maybe a little bit more, find out how you're doing it, how you're delivering it and all that stuff. I guess one thing that popped into my head in terms of young people and COVID and pandemic is that, you know, the charity, I know you know them, Just Like Us.
I do, yes. I'm an ambassador.
Yes, I thought you were an ambassador for them. You're an ambassador for the Albert Kennedy Trust as well.
I am, AKT, and I'm an ambassador for Albert Kennedy Trust. Just Like Us, Open Indoors London, which caters to LGBT over 50s, and... there's a one that I've just...
A Childline,
that's the one.
Yeah.
Shout, yeah, give us a shout.
I've been doing my homework.
Yeah, and Give Us a Shout London, which is a text service, which is really good. Young people can text in their issues to shout. So, yeah, I love having a hand in the communities that I feel like need a little bit of support.
Mm, amazing. I was so Just Like Us have done a survey on young people. Did you see it? 3,000 young people and lesbians come out as being, young lesbians as being the ones that have struggled the most.
Absolutely. And a good friend of mine, Amy Ashton, who's used to be the media editor for Pink News, she now is the head of media for Just Like Us, and she's actually just written a piece about the potential reasons as to why lesbians are the most affected. So that's definitely a piece that perhaps yourself and the listeners would be really interested to read, because she makes some, you know, she's done lots of research and some really important things to consider in that writing.
Yeah, because I've had Emma Fay. Do you know Emma Fay from Just Like Us?
Yes,
she's been on the podcast.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah, amazing. Talking about inclusive education. Yeah, brilliant. Yeah, they're all amazing, Just Like Us, in my opinion. Wonderful. So how can people get hold of you? Well, yeah, tell us the best places to contact you if people want to follow you. Or
I guess my website is sharbailey.com. I'm going to be doing more blogs. I've just written one last night, actually. So I've got a new blog coming out this week about sensory acuity, and there's a test that you can take online. Mm-hmm. But generally, if you want to follow my social media, is @shar_bailey_. I do a little bit on Instagram and I tweet a little bit. If anyone's interested, that's where you can find me.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for being on the Queerpreneur podcast. It's been such a pleasure to talk to you and meet you.
And thanks for not making me say queerpreneur. Oh, did I say it right? Queerpreneur. I think I've been practicing that for the last 24 hours. What's it called? Queerpreneur. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks, Charles.
You're welcome.
Well, wasn't that just the best conversation? I'd love to hear about your biggest takeaway, and I'm sure Shah would love to do so as well. So do let me know. Please send me a DM over on Instagram and let me know, yeah, what was your biggest takeaway? And if you've not yet subscribed to the podcast, you might want to do that so you don't miss any future episodes. And I know that I say this nearly every week, but please do leave a review for the podcast, because the more reviews we get, the more people get to hear about us and the more people that we can support. That's it for this week. Check out my Allies workshop, link in the show notes. So much love to you all, and I will catch you next time.